Today we're continuing our teaching series on the Psalms of Confidence, and this is the second part of Psalm 35. I will be going over verses 11 through the final verse 28 today. So this whole psalm is basically an appeal to heaven of a bold heart and of a clear conscience. And in this psalm, David has been pushed to a point of irritation and woe that is beyond measure. And this, he's been pushed to this point by the malice of his enemies. And as I noted last week, this psalm follows a pattern of complaint, prayer, and promise or praise three times. So as last week, the first 10 verses were example of this. This is, again, carried out two more times in verses 11 through 18, and then through 19 through 28. And having just studied prayer providentially, this fits in nicely with those teachings. Now, as we study this, I'm going to ask you to think about this as an example to turn to in those times of trials, in those times of frustration. I think we know as Christians that many times it is our lot to be faced with such trials, to be faced with adversity, to be put against the malice of those that are wicked, those that do not love our God. When we face those trials, we are not to return evil for evil, but instead be an example as an ambassador of Christ. We are to humble ourselves, not giving over to the temptation to be puffed up, and to pray for our safe delivery, resting and trusting in God. Now this relying and trusting in his providence only helps to promote our own growth and joy that we find in him. When we have this trust and this joy, when we come to understand and accept that any trial that we go through is for our good, we can fully praise and glorify him as our chief end is, as our purpose of life is, to enjoy and glorify him forever. If you want to follow along with me, verses 11 through 28. First, fierce witnesses rise up. They ask me things that I do not know. They reward me evil for good, to the sorrow of my soul. But as for me, when they were sick, my clothing was sackcloth. I humbled myself with fasting, and my prayer would return to my own heart. I paced about as though he were my friend or brother. I bowed down heavily, as one who mourns for his mother. But in my adversity, they rejoiced and gathered together. Attackers gathered against me, and I did not know it. They tore at me and did not cease. With ungodly mockers at feast, they gnashed at me with their teeth. Lord, how long will you look on? Rescue me from their destructions, my precious life from the lions. I will give you thanks in the great assembly. I will praise you among many people. Let them not rejoice over me who are wrongfully my enemies, nor let them wink with the eye who hate me without a cause. For they do not speak peace, but they devise deceitful matters against the quiet ones in the land. They also opened their mouth wide against me and said, "Aha, aha, our eyes have seen it." This you have seen, O Lord. Do not keep silence. O Lord, do not be far from me. Stir up yourself and awake to my vindication, to my cause, my God and my Lord. Vindicate me, O Lord my God, according to your righteousness, and let them not rejoice over me. Let them not say in their hearts, "Ah, so we would have it." Let them not say, "We have swallowed him up." Let them be ashamed and brought to mutual confusion who rejoice at my hurt. Let them be clothed with shame and dishonor who exalt themselves against me. Let them shout for joy and be glad, who favor my righteous cause. And let them say continually, let the Lord be magnified, who has pleasure in the prosperity of his servant. And my tongue shall speak of your righteousness and of your praise all the day long. So going to our Psalter as it reads, going over verses 11 and 12. False witnesses against me rose and laid charges I knew not of. They gave me evil for my good and caused great sorrow to my soul. So in these two first verses, we have two different attacks that were laid out against David. The first being perjury and the second being ingratitude. In the offense of perjury, this could be related to Saul charging David with treason or other acts of unlawfulness. False witnesses were gathered and rose up to make charges that were untrue. They were fabricated for the destruction of David's reputation. Now, it is a sad thing for the Christian that the reality of the world, that the honor, life, the liberty, and estates of the righteous man is sometimes at the mercy of the wicked and the evil men. And this is how David is repaid for leading them with a righteous rod and an upright heart. And as they repaid evil for his good, that is the second thing that he had to face in the treacherous attacks of the wicked. David did nothing but work to preserve the kingdom and its throne. And now that that very throne had turned against him in acts of treachery and deceit. So here we have David acting as a type of Christ, and like Christ, to whom the world was very ungrateful. In the next verses, also being a type of Christ, David shows us that we are to be an example of Christ, a Christly ambassador, and how he deals with them tenderly, even despite their afflictions they laid upon him. Verses 13 and 14. But as for me, when they were sick, I changed my clothes and wore sackcloth. I made my soul low with fasting, for my prayers returned back to me, as though they were a dearest friend or like a brother, I behaved. I bowed down heavily, as though I mourned the death of my mother. So, even as his enemies were sick, David sympathized with their grief. He was not related to them. He had no obligations to them. He had nothing to really lose or gain by their death, yet he still was upright in his attitude towards them. This, he gives us the example of how to deal with your enemies in an upright attitude and with the principles of compassion and dignity. He dealt with them even on a higher level than a simple stranger. He says he made his soul low as they were a dearest friend, like a brother, and mourned as though they were my mother. David was a man of war at times. He was a bold lion. And yet he was still able to soften his heart and was able to have compassion and tenderness for his enemies. His humility in this is an example to us, an example of our duty to our fellow man, to cultivate a tender affection and a pious affection. That is our duty as a saint. He was concerned for their souls, and together with his prayers, he practiced joint humiliation and self-affliction. This he did with his fasting and in the discomfort of wearing sackcloth. He expresses grief, not only for their affliction, but also for their sin. This being another example to us to mourn for the sins of those who do not mourn for those sins themselves. All of this, even as they had been so terrible to him, even rejoicing in his own trouble and sorrow. Verses 15 and 16 read, But in my trouble they rejoiced and joined together against me. Yes, joining forces to do harm, they tore me and refused to cease. As mocking hypocrites at feasts, they gnashed their wicked teeth at me. So this rejoicing is very much a character that the wicked display. They display the joy in those who share in their misery. The wicked, having no source of true joy, true lasting joy of glorifying and worshiping God, they turn to the ways of the world, the flesh, and the devil. Misery loves company. And as David fell under the persecution of Saul, those that persecuted him became pleased. They even went beyond rejoicing in his pain, but sought out to triumph in his fall as they tore him and his good name. They showed no mercy in their relentless onslaught of attacks. They were like a rabid pack of animals, circling their prey. They worked themselves into a fervent fit of passion, gnashing their teeth at him. To be in this situation, at the center and the target of this vile passion, is unsettling, to say the least. And so our psalmist cries out to the Lord in the next verse for help. Verse 17, "How long, O Lord, will you look on? Rescue my soul from destruction. Rescue my darling from lions." So as David asks for help in verses 1 and 2, he pleads to God for help once again. Firmly believing in the omniscience of God, he asks, how long will he be a spectator to these atrocities? How long will he test his saint? As he asks for God to take up his shield to defend him, and as he will ask in the future verses 22 and 23, he asks for the Lord to no longer be silent, but instead be stirred up to his cause and to answer his pleas as that he is being attacked by his enemies who are as ferocious as lions. David feels that his soul is on the verge of destruction, and this threat is now comparable to these lions, as I said, waiting to devour him. So his plea is to stir up his Lord to action. Now, this is a demonstration of faith that we can learn from, for we can all say that we've had impending danger or being under the attack of the wicked, and we've all felt that we are on the verge of destruction. And so it is best to turn to God in these times and not to rely on our own hands. When we feel like we have nowhere else to turn, we know that we can rest in Him. His darling, in this case, is referring to his own soul. It is his darling because it is the only soul that he has. It is truly precious to him, being his only one, his solitary one, his desolate, deserted, and destitute of human hope. As Daniel was in the physical den of lions, David was there in a spiritual sense. These lions are so cruel, fierce, angry, and to fight them with what weapons? What weapons does he have? He has nothing. He has nothing to fend them off but his prayer. He has nothing but his God. But what else does he need? Even on the brink of despair, he's still prepared. This we know as his faith is so great that once again he has already resolved that he will give thanks, as he proclaims in the next verse. Verse 18, "I surely will give thanks to you. Yes, in the great congregation, I'll praise you among much people." So he already knows that he will give thanks in the great congregation. This is so that all the church may know and be informed of the goodness and mercy of the Lord. Now, this is something that is worth noting and worth recording for the spread of the gospel and the glorification of God. As much as men record their failures and grief of this world, a good saint should record his mercies. So David, knowing this, makes sure to give praise among many people to witness to the power, mercy, and glory of God. As this prayer ends in praise, so should all prayers. Verse 19. Let not those who are enemies wrongfully rejoice over me, nor permit them to wink their eyes that hate me without any cause. So here, our psalmist has a request after giving praise to God. He prays that they do not have a cause for their enmity. He asks God for them to not rejoice or triumph in his own sin that he may fall to, or to in the overthrow of his throne. He asks to be spared from their scornful looks and gestures. He asks to be spared from their taunts and not succumb to their ploys to rile him up. To cause hatred is a mark of the wicked. And David asks God, as the protector of all who are wronged, to suppress their attacks. Next verse is 20 and 21. They speak not peace, instead they plot wickedness against peaceful men. They open wide their mouth at me and say, aha, our eyes have seen. Now these wicked men, they do not speak peace to him or to any of the upright. These were the types that David had to deal with many times, as also did Christ. These types of men are also such a type that are enemies of the people of God. They do nothing but spread slander and maliciousness, and want nothing to do with peace or maintaining it. This is not only shown in how they dealt with David, who wanted nothing but peace living under the crown of Saul, but also the Messiah. Christ showed great humility in coming into this world, and during his time here, it was a state of humiliation for him. During his life, he lived in a lowly and humble manner, being patient and kind, and doing so even towards those who insulted him and wished to bring him harm. As David and Christ carried these burdens, so do the people of God, as they are influenced by his grace and spirit. Even though saints are quiet and peaceable, the wicked continually plot against them and devise plots to bring them harm. They open their mouths wide as if they want to swallow them whole, as they did our psalmist. Our psalmist has already stated in other psalms that they even wish to eat his flesh, dining on his miseries in their lives. They try to proclaim that they have seen his folly and want to convince others of this lie. These are the most wicked of the wicked, who have no remorse and no line which is to preserve, no line they do not mind crossing. These are those that murder their own mother and kin, and have no remorse in any action. Though sometimes they are allowed to plot and operate unhindered and unchallenged by men, they will face their judgment as these things God sees and intervenes, as David proclaims and asks for God to not be far away. Verse 22. Lord, you have seen, be not silent. O Lord, do not be far away. So they falsely accused David. They accused him, and there was but one witness to their accusations. God. God does not believe these accusations at all, for he knows the truth. He knows all things and knew that these accusations carried no merit. And so David knows that God is the only one who can help him in this case. So he asks for him to not be far away. He asks for the Lord to be near, so that he may appear for his help and deliverance. When in battle, sometimes just having an ally nearby gives enough confidence to be able to persevere through that moment that you feel is your end. So David is making the same plea. Being close by, if need be, the Lord can step in with a shield to deflect any incoming attack. And so he asks for God to be stirred awake and ready in the next verse. Verse 23, stir up yourself and wait to judge, my God, my Lord, uphold my cause. So to David, God had appeared to be absent or asleep during his time of anguish and torment. So he pleads for God to take up his cause. He appeals to God as a judge who will avenge him from his enemies. and deal with them in perfect order, having them pay the fines that are equal to their sin. Our psalmist's righteous cause needs defending and needs to be maintained, so he appeals to the covenant with which God is his Lord. Verse 24, with justice judge me, Lord, my God. Give my foes no cause to rejoice. So again, this appeal is repeated here. David thinks that the joy of his accusers will be cut short as soon as justice is handed to them as their lot. So he pleads to be delivered out of their hands. He does not want them to have any pleasure at all in their thoughts and that he has been defeated and that they are able to claim victory for themselves, even for a moment. Verse 25, let them not think, we have received our heart's desire, we've swallowed him. So even to let the enemies think that they have won their cause would be a detriment to David's cause. They had their mouths open, up wide to swallow him. They had wished to eat his flesh, as Psalm 27 stated. They had been compared to roaring lions in verse 17. Psalm 14, verse 4 says, have all workers of iniquity no knowledge, who eat up my people as they eat bread, and do not call on the Lord? So the wicked, they work to eat up God's people as they would eat bread. And so David desires these workers of iniquity be soundly defeated, and that they have no taste of victory for themselves to savor in their mouths. His desire is for them to have a sour taste of defeat, and that is to be the last memory they have of this exchange, so they don't have the slightest desire to rally against him again. He wants them to be vanquished like a dog, sent away with its tail between its legs, ashamed and low in its defeat. Verse 26, let them be brought low and ashamed who rejoice in my affliction. Clothe them in shame and dishonor who magnify themselves against me. So here David's request for their defeat continues in this verse. He asks that they all together be brought to shame and confusion in the same way that they gather together to plot against him. With their schemes being defeated, he wants them to wear their defeat like a coat that covers them, which they cannot take off. God makes little of his enemies, and so David appeals to his Lord to make them an example of all who call themselves allies to the workers of iniquity. Only shame and dishonor is a lot of those who plot against God's people. And so finally, we are closing with the praise and prayer to God in verses 27 and 28. Let them shout for joy and be glad, those who favor my righteous cause. Yes, let them say continually, oh, let the Lord be magnified, because the Lord has pleasure and prosperity for his servant. I'll speak about your righteousness, and your praise I'll sing all day long. So David's cause was a righteous one. He had not committed any crime or sin. He did not commit anything that was criminal against Saul, who persecuted him. And with this, he asks that all those who favored him in his cause, even if they were not able to come to his aid, that they would be rewarded abundantly. The day will come when shouts of victory will be given by all those who are on Christ's side. The battle will turn in their favor, and they will shout continually, let the Lord be magnified. David's allies recognized him as the Lord's servant and saw his favor to David. There is no nobler title than servant of God, and no greater reward than for our God to delight in our prosperity. So with the vindication of his cause, the bringing his enemies to shame and confusion, and the glory brought to his God, with all of this, David proclaims that his tongue will be brought to unceasing praise to his gracious Lord. From morning light to evening, his praises will be sung to glorify it. The Lord. As our psalmist resolved to do so, so should be our resolve and goal. Whatever we do, we should do it well and with joyful praise to God. Be sober in mind and let that be a praise to God. When we rise in the morning, resolve not to do evil and let that be a praise to God. when working at our job. Do so diligently, and let that be a praise to God. When dealing with difficult people, do so kindly, and let that be a praise to God. In your daily carrying on of your duties and your stations in life, I encourage you to prepare yourself to praise God all day long.